Well, hi, everybody.
How are you today? It's been a good day so far.
We're studying the book of Nehemiah, and it's a remarkable story. Somebody have a plan and then work on that plan. And Nehemiah is going to do it. I want our children, I want my family to be a Jew again. I want us as Israel to be back within our own land. I want to see Jerusalem brought back from the ashes. I want to see the temple rebuilt before you finish building your own house. I want to see all of those things happen. But the first thing that has to happen, somebody's got to build a wall. Somebody's got to build a wall around Jerusalem. Or the minute we build anything at all, we'll be rampaged and ran over. Our people are left defenseless. Walls were really important things at this time. They were the only way you could have defense at all. For that reason, to Nehemiah chapter 2, with me, go ahead and turn over your Bible and follow up on the screen or just take my word. All right. Nehemiah chapter 4. When Sambalat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry with greatly said. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, "What are these people Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life through those heaps of rubble burned as they are?" And then piling on, Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing on it would break it down, this wall of stone." The lesson is entitled "Dirty Rotten Scoundrel." Don't know if that's in the Bible, but it's a good description of what I'm about to say. Because we within our lives, and we ourselves, are all critics. We're all critics. We all have something to say about someone. A critic is one who forms and expresses opinions or judgments of a person or of a thing. Now, there are good critics and there are bad critics. A good critic makes careful analysis and an objective attempt to determine the merits of both sides. A bad critic indulges in fault finding, censure, and judgment. The words that we say have tremendous impact in human lives. To that end, I think we ought to be, perhaps, or at least I know that I ought to be more concise, more careful in the things I say. I had strong opinions about almost everything. I don't know if they're very bright, but they're strong. And it's quite a chore for me to hold my tongue. One of the great people in this world is Jean Marie Davis. Jean has already passed on. This is my wife's mom and dad. Jean has already passed on. The reason is prayer. She's not going to be around for a long, long time at all. But she's a wonderful woman. She raised 5 kids and they had no money. I lived in a chicken coop for about 1 week. So things were tough for them, for Sandra, as they were growing up. But she did have a Christmas tree, and she was aware of that. She probably worked on it. One of the stories that I heard from Sandra said years and years ago, it's always stuck in my mind, is she was going to an assembly of church or to a prom, and she walked down the steps of the house in her new dressing. And Sandy's a knocker. Y'all know that. Y'all know that. Sandy's a knocker. But I saw a picture there, and wow. Okay? We know you're going to be started. Wow. Beautiful. The dress is beautiful. And as she walked down the steps, she saw her mom at the basement. The And she said, "Mama, did I look pretty?" And her mama said, "Pretty you." Now, this is not coming from the bad woman. This is coming from a real good, profoundly good woman. But we all say things that we wish we had. But when we say words of criticism, they are carefully chosen. Carefully chosen, because everybody is a critic. President Teddy Roosevelt said this, and I quote, "It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled, or where the doer of deeds could have done it better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marked by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasm, the great devotion, and spends himself on a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst can fail, at least fail while daring great, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who do neither victory or defeat." Derby Robinson. Basically, there's three that's mentioned here in Nehemiah chapter 4. There is Sanballat, another guy by the name of Tobiah, and then another guy by the name of Geshem. And each one of them were part of a certain group of people that will make breakthrough quickly. But I think for the purposes of this lesson, we can look to Sanballat as representing the symbolic way every antagonistic force comes into our lives when we are finally on the move. When we are finally on the move. When your life finds its direction, the devil will try to steer you away. When this church, and as this church continues to grow, we will have a giant's target painted on our back. Because God is not through with disrupting the plan of God here in this place. There will be dirty, rotten scoundrels who come out. And sometimes there are our own brothers for no other reason but to divert us from such a good. Sanballat represents symbolically the spirit of antagonism that messes you and messes myself. Sanballat is the person whose position in your life is to speak negatively of your dreams and plans. Sanballat is the person in your life who represents the haters. Because some people can't handle that your life is moving. They can't handle your life is finally moving. I understand that the Jews and Samaritans have cultural disdain for one another. Sanballat was taken in a rift of antagonism towards the crew of Nehemiah. And we're going to find out why that is, but I mean, his response is remarkable, antagonistic toward what Nehemiah is doing. In fact, he uses the word furious in the Hebrew, which is ra-vah. He's furious at what Nehemiah is doing. Our version of that word might be indignant, angry, ticked. What's interesting is this. I studied, and I couldn't find one instance where Nehemiah had ever been in the Sanballat of Tobiah. Never had they done anything to Sanballat of Tobiah. So why was he angry? What was his problem? Why did he choose to run them down? Why did he choose to disturb them? Why did he do that? Why does anybody do that? But why did he do it? He didn't do it because they never harmed him. He didn't do it because they owed him money and wouldn't pay him back. He didn't do it because somebody was chasing after his wife. You know what he did? Had nothing to do with what he'd done. The reason he did it because of who he was. He hid him for the most fundamental aspect of his life. He hated Nehemiah to the core because his heart had been turned to God. His heart had been turned to God. Sometimes your greatest critics criticize you not for what you've done, but for who you are. Who you are. Now, who are these people? Who's standing for them? Who's for what? Well, realize there are two exiles out of Jerusalem. There was a Syrian exile, and then there was the Babylonian exile. During this time, the way that Syria and Babylon dealt with the countries that they had overrun is they took the most bright and talented people in the nation and shipped them off to the palace where they were, and then they trained them in their own culture and beliefs. What they wanted to do was assimilate the brides into their culture. When the time finally came, in a portion of Israel, and then in Nehemiah, when the children of God came home, they met a Samuel who had been there the whole time. He had never been to home. He, with his ragtag group of people, lived in the shambles that was Jerusalem. But even in a ghetto, the top guy is still the top guy. You do find some source of hierarchy, some source of control and authority. And that's what Samuel family had. And when Nehemiah grew back, that was a threat to his authority. That was a threat to his authority. And so the battle was about to begin. As a result of the years that Sambalat, Tobiah, and Geshur had been in Jerusalem, in its ruins, they dominated that region. See, whenever you intend to make an impact and execute change, you will find force. Often people resent the direction that you're going. They resent that you even have it. When Nehemiah comes back, Nehemiah becomes a threat. People who need to feel are people who don't want you to find God. Now, Tobiah is the governor of Ammon and Transjordan. It's interesting about Tobiah, he considered himself a believer. He hadn't followed off to the foreign gods. He wouldn't bow down to any idols at all. In fact, his name means the Lord is good. It's Tobiah's name. But when you hear what Tobiah said, you can see clearly he has no heart for God. He's a guy with the right name and the wrong attitude. Tobiah is a guy who is wearing two faces. He is a guy who, with his mouth, worships God, but with his actions flies in the face of all that God wants. You got to be careful with people who go to church. You got to be careful with people who go to church. Because just because they go to church doesn't mean they're not Sambalat. Just because they go to church doesn't mean they're not Jack Tobiah. Tobiah had all the glory. People show up to stomp on your vision. The devil shows up to stomp on your purpose. Sambalat, Tobiah, and Geshem show up to try to keep you from rebuilding the wall of your own life. Tobiah was a world. In the course of my life,
I've been a minister since I was 20 years old. That was almost 50 years ago. Some of the most hurtful things come from the people who love us, and I love them. We're in the top of that. You know what I determined a long time ago? Is that I'm not coming back. God has placed me on a high mountain. I'm not coming back. You can't grab me there. You can't get me off of this. You can say what you want, you can lie like you want, you can doctor like you want, because I've come too far to come back down. I'm not coming back. I'm not coming down. Not stupid low. Here's how you stay on top of the spirit of integrity. Notice this. You can take note of what right this time. The greatest path to discouragement is fatigue. I want you to understand that the people who have it against you will come at you when you're tired. They'll come at you when you're exhausted. They'll come at you when you have the least resources. 1 Peter chapter 4. Meanwhile, the people of Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there's so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. Also, their enemies said, before they know it, the Persians will be right there among them, and will kill them and put an end to their work. Right when the children of Israel were exhausted from rebuilding that wall, the wall around Jerusalem, 6 feet thick, 10 feet tall, high, they built in 52 days. You couldn't do that with a common day person. But they were tired. They needed a break. Fatigue is powerful as well. The most notorious industrial accidents in recent years have come in a particular way. Exxon Valdez, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, the fatal navigation error of Korean Airlines 007, all occurred in the middle of the night. When the U.S. Vincennes shot down the Iranian A300 Airbus, killing all 290 people, fatigue had stressed the operator for multiple days without sleep in a high-tech combat information center to miscalculate the intentions of that Korean airliner, finally indicating that it was on a diving ground. And it was shot out of the sky. The Challenger space shuttle, the NASA officials who made the decision whether to fly or not, had been up for 36 hours in preparation for this. And when they delivered the data, it was too cold to take off that moon. Their judgment was skewed. And because of that, Challenger went up, and those astronauts died, and it almost killed our space program. It happened when people suffer with fatigue. Fatigue always comes. This is me. Fatigue always comes with its partner, fear. Have you ever noticed when you're really, really tired and one thing more gets put on your plate, you just can't handle it? I can't take any more. I don't want to hear about it. You have built mountains, but at your lowest point, with the greatest fatigue, one more little problem seems insurmountable. Are you like me that way? You have times in your life where you say, one more thing gets put on my plate. I can't handle it. That's because the team breeds fear. It was Vince Lombardi who made that earlier quotation. The team makes cowards of us all. The second thing we need to do is we need to pray and we need to focus. Let me say what I mean. There's a great passage here in chapter 4. It says this. But we pray to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet the threat. See, this is the threat. The threat was at least three armies decided to infiltrate the ranks of those rebuilding the wall. And when they weren't looking, they were going to scatter. Now, these people were working hard enough. Passing here says they're exhausted. And now they've got people that are in their own ranks who need to kill them. Nehemiah's response was interesting. First thing he did was pray. Okay? That's the first thing he did was he prayed. He brought it before God. The second thing he did was action. Action. I prayed about it. I don't need to do anything. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all. Nehemiah prayed about this, but he also told every worker to carry a sword. Every worker now, he carried a sword. That means I got a bucket in one hand and a sword in the other. I'm armed all the time. And you know what happened? You know what happened in the midst of that fearful time? Passage says in verse 14, don't be afraid of the brother of the Lord who is brave and awesome and fights for your brothers, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your home. What happened is the armies against them gave up the war. Nehemiah did some interesting things that every good leader does. In the midst of the turmoil, he took another survey of the job, found out the weak points of the wall, and encouraged his people to continue to work and not to be afraid. He was a great leader, and he walked among his own soldiers. Finally, they reviewed the efforts to build the wall. They had taken their break. They allowed themselves a time of rest. But now they've been revived, and it was time to get back to work. Notice what verse 15 says in chapter 4. When our enemies knew that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each one for our own work. I suggest you critique the criticism. What do I mean by that? Well, one of the hardest lessons I've ever learned is the criticism is not bad. Although it feels bad. When there's not a lot of them, you know, I tell you what, I wasn't feeling good. I had a good ear chewing, and now I feel good. I don't think that's happened to any of them. But I found out that criticism is not a bad thing. There are very good critics who happen to change our lives because we listen to them. You ought to be thankful that you have some people in your life who love you enough to offend you. Having said that, I've also learned that certain people don't deserve to hear. Certain people don't deserve you listening to them. Constructive criticism, when you listen to even criticism is what you listen to even when you don't like it. But there are more folks out there who will say things to you often that is not worthy of your listening to. They try to attack me and the Jews in the event of the story of the dialogue we find in verse 2. Notice the dialogue that's taking place. In the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, what are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore this wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will you finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? Let me tell you something. If somebody talks to you this way, they're not worth you listening to. You deserve respect. You deserve respect. The critics that don't have your best interests at heart will come to you in your time. And they'll not talk to you about what you've done that may have been bad. They'll tell you that you're bad. They don't want you to feel guilty. They want you to feel shame. That person is not one of your peer. Sometimes we have to critique the critics. But what I want you to notice about this criticism regarding Tobiah and Sanballat, you notice the verse in verse 2 that went forward. Did you notice who the criticism was directed at? Their own people. Nehemiah were among them. They weren't saying this to Nehemiah. They didn't have the courage to say this to Nehemiah. They said it to their own group. Somebody who talks behind your back is not worthy of your ear. Is not worthy of your ear. Constructive criticism always comes to your face. Constructive criticism will always come to your face. Destructive criticism will always come behind your back. Please understand that when people love you and want to see you do better and want to help you better, they have love, step in love, to talk to you. To talk to you. What Nehemiah does then is he offers what's called an imprecatory prayer. An imprecatory prayer is a Hebraic prayer that you pray when somebody comes against you and you tell God to deal with them. Because they're not coming against you, they're coming against God. And that's what Nehemiah said. Lord, help me with my enemies, because they're not my enemies, they're yours. Let me wrap this up. The more you get our all together, the more we see our lives. It always is a gather project, and you admire how far you've come, but you look at what you still have to do. And I've never built a wall like this. That's probably the building of the wall. But if you're building a wall, I think the first thing you notice once you've come quite a way are the gaps that were made. The gaps that are left to do. In the building of the wall, our lives in the straight church, we will be and are very aware of the gaps that remain. They show what is lying ahead of us. They don't discourage, but we are aware of where we need to grow as a church and as individuals. I want to ask the first one to each and every one of you. Is there anybody in here who can say, I have lost my praise? I've lost my joy. I have lost my smile. And I've lost my peace. And I've lost my song. I've lost my worship. But I am about to get it back. Anybody can say that in this room? Anybody at all? Anybody listening to the end of the sermon? Anybody at all? Anybody fear that they've lost these things? Anybody tired of living without it? Anybody waiting to ask this great congregation for encouragement and prayer as they get back to building the wall? The devil made a mistake. The devil made a mistake when he started to dishearten you. You are a bad target for the devil. Because you've got Jesus Christ in your life. And that encouragement never stopped. The devil made a bad choice. He's wasted his time with you. Brothers and sisters, there are certainly times in my life, and even during this day, when I lost a couple of battles. When I recognize that I want to get it back, I'm not coming down from the mountain God put me on. And sometimes I struggle. If there's anybody who struggles with it, then join me and we'll pray for each other this morning. This day.